Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Liston Witherell, a marketer and a CEO of GoodFunnel. This episode is brought to you by Tiny Reminder. Tired of nagging people? Build a simple form, set a reminder schedule, and add recipients. We'll keep sending reminders until they submit a response. This tool is forever free. Sign up today at tinyreminder.com. Hey, Liston.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for making the time today.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to be here with you.
So before we start the conversation on the one day of customer research, let's ask you a few questions about your persona.
Okay, I'm ready. Hit me.
Fantastic. Liston, what do you do for a living?
So for a living, I'm, like you said, marketer and CEO of GoodFunnel. What we focus on is on-page conversions and paid traffic. And so what we try to figure out is, who should we be marketing to? What do they care about? How do they make decisions? That's really what I'm fascinated by, and I find myself reading all kinds of things about psychology and behavioral economics in my free time in order to better answer that question for the work I do and for my clients.
How does it translate into actual consulting work? Do you do strategy or do you do some hands-on research?
Yeah, we do both. So the strategy kind of comes in when we're talking, asking questions like, who should we be selling this to? What do they care about? Where do we reach them? What is the process by which we should put them through based on what their awareness is? And then we'll also do hands-on work too, actual A-B testing, iterative conversion rate optimization, stuff like that.
Can you tell us about your story? How did you get to the place where you are today?
Yeah, I can't tell you the whole story in the confines of this podcast, but I'll do my best. So how I got to where I am now, the short version is that I was the director of business development and marketing at an environmental consulting company, about a $10 or $12 million company. And I have a master's degree in environmental science. So that was a very natural fit for me. And while I was there, what I realized was I liked the data-driven approach that I could take with digital marketing. And I liked how fast things happened online. I was able to implement a new website for that company. I was able to implement an email marketing program, and I just really dug into, finding out what is this whole online marketing world about. And that's kind of how I got here. And then I started doing consulting work on the side while I still had a day job, which led me into what I'm doing now. And strangely, people pay me on a regular basis to do this for them. So that's what I do now.
Is it just you, or do you have a team at GoodFunnel?
I have a partner. His name's Dustin, and he lives up in Canada. And so we are a remote team, and then we work with about a dozen or so contractors on a pretty regular basis. So we're a boutique agency, and like I said, we're fairly focused and niched on conversion rate optimization, getting people more conversions and sending them better paid traffic. So that's kind of our narrow focus, and that's what we do.
What does your typical day look like?
That's a really good question. See, Jane, you've been in consulting, so you know that it can vary a lot. A typical day, I have a set routine, which I go through every single day, which is I wake up very early. I go to the gym and work out. I'm into weightlifting, and then I meditate and I plan out what I'm going to do for my day. And then I have about 2 to 3 hours of uninterrupted work every morning where I'm just doing usually longer term projects, usually for my business, not for clients. And then in the afternoons, it's filled with a variety of client work and sales and prospecting and, you know, new projects that we're working on. And then in the evenings, I like to, you know, study or learn new things that are applicable to my career.
That sounds like a perfect schedule, really. Not all of us so perfect to follow similar example.
I wouldn't say I'm perfect, but I would say that I routinely get better at it. It's a challenge for sure.
That's great to hear. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
That's a very good question. The thing that I enjoy the most is definitely learning. So, and what I mean by that is when you go into any project, let's say, you know, you're redesigning an interface, you're always going to come to a point where there are several plausible hypotheses that would get you to a better answer, right? And being able to test it and learn, you know, what's actually going to work by having groups of people respond to whatever that stimulus is that you're putting in front of them, whether it's an interface or an ad or a landing page, and then doing a postmortem and figuring out what did we learn through that process. To me, that's just so fascinating because, you know, you don't always know what's going to happen. And it's nice to be able to, in a very structured way, learn something about your customers and your business. The thing I like the least, you know, today it was definitely fighting with technology that didn't want to work with me. So we had some problems getting this podcast going, but I wasn't referring to that. I was working with a platform that I use for landing pages and for my email automation, and it just was not working. And I find that you end up losing so much time in the quest to be more efficient often. And so that can be very frustrating.
I hear you. What is your next big thing?
The next big thing, that's a good question. I don't have a perfect answer for you, but certainly I'm working on lots of educational material. There is huge demand for people to understand how we get results and the process that we go through. And so we're working on that actively now, building out that educational material so that we can A, help people who want to do what we do, and B, help a subset of prospects who come to us but either can't afford us or it's not the right time or they want to try it themselves, and we can give them the tools that they need in order to go through it step by step and implement conversion optimization and research and learning about their customers for themselves.
Yeah, that sounds like an honorable pursuit, really. And actually, it serves two purposes. You kind of nurture your own future customers, and you help those who can't afford your services. That's great.
Right. I'm not a philanthropist, but I'm doing my best.
Okay, let's proceed to our main conversation. What caught me really was the suggestion for the topic was how you can double what you know about your customers by just doing one day of research or something like that. And that's really a very bold statement. Mm-hmm. So if you were to briefly recap that method that you're suggesting to us this way, in a few sentences, that would be great.
So the short of it is, first of all, I come with the assumption that we don't usually know as much about our customers and prospects as we think we do. The short kind of bulleted list of the things that people should be doing is A, they should be talking to their customers. B, they should be observing their behavior. C, they should be collecting information that their customers create that's readily available online and in other places, maybe with, you know, people on your team, say in sales or customer support. And then you should also look briefly at what your competitors are doing. It's not bulletproof just because it's out there. We don't necessarily know how well it's working, but we can glean some information from that process. So that's the short of it, those the four things that I really recommend you do.
Let's start with talking to your customers. How would one approach it if we only had one day? That does require plenty of interview scheduling up front. Or is there a way to do it better?
Jane, you're getting me on a technicality here. So let's assume you schedule all of your interviews for a morning, right? Then you can get it done in a day. You're absolutely right, though. The scheduling takes a little bit of work. But, you know, the key there in the way you go about it is to put your customers in a position to help you and communicate that effectively to them so that they know that they're in a unique position to give you information in order to improve your business and therefore potentially improve the service or the product that you're offering them. Most people are very open to that. They've already made the hard decision to work with you and pay you money. So most people are very open to sharing what they know. Also, people like to feel like an expert. So if you say, hey, you have information that no one else has and it's really valuable to me, you're an expert in buying my thing or using my thing, then, you know, they're usually willing to help you. All you really need is 5 to 7 interviews, and they don't have to be super long. Usually 20 to 30 minutes is enough. And you're asking all types of questions, but mainly you want to look for what were those external triggers that caused them to look for a product or service like yours in the first place? How did they feel at the time? What was going on in their lives? And, you know, really get to how they made a decision. What was their process like? And the key, of course, and we have a slide deck on this that's very long, 70 or 80 slides on how to interview your customers. One of the keys is to just ask open-ended questions and listen, right? One of the dangers of interviewing is you may be projecting the answers that you want or some assumptions that you have onto the interviewee, and they're going to want to please you. So you have to really interview in the right way. So that means asking open-ended questions and really avoiding why questions so that people aren't rationalizing their behavior. Like I said, 5 to 7 of these interviews, and you will be shocked at how much you can learn in that time.
You've been doing these for ages, and as for me personally, this part scares me totally out. Like, what would you tell yourself a few years ago when you were just starting out, what not to be afraid of, how to do this the right way that you now know how?
Yeah. So can I ask you a question, Jane?
Sure.
Okay. So what are you afraid of? What would be the worst case scenario if you got into an interview and things went terribly wrong? What would happen?
I think being awkward. Uh-huh. Yeah, like my mom had a saying. My mom had a saying many years ago, like, whatever worst happens, they're not going to hit you in your face and it's right. going to be fine. So I think it's applicable here, right? That's what you're saying.
Well, so I conduct my interviews online, so no one's had the opportunity to hit me in the face, luckily. So I think awkwardness is one fear. Another fear that I hear is, what if I don't do it right? Either way, from the perspective of the person you're interviewing, they don't know you very well, usually, unless you're in a one-to-one consulting business like us. But usually, the person doesn't know you very well, and so they're not going to know whether you're being awkward or not. They're not going to know whether you're doing it correctly or not, because they probably haven't been in an interview like this before. So I would say, you know, It's similar to the advice I give to people who take on public speaking. You're in charge of the conversation. And if you forget to say something or do something wrong, no one really knows it. You know, they're there to see the show. Similarly, if you're conducting an interview, which you are now, by the way, Jane, and you're doing a very good job. Conducting, yeah, no worries. If you're conducting an interview, the interviewee is looking for you to prompt them along the way, and they're just kind of in response mode, right? They're going to respond to any time you prompt them. other point I want to make about awkwardness is it is a key and useful component to doing these interviews effectively. What I mean by that is some people will have a hard time answering open-ended questions and doing it well. They'll have a hard time expressing themselves. And one of the tools that you have in order to elicit more information from them is to ask a question and be quiet and allow awkward silence to take over. When you do that, the person will be very compelled to fill that awkward silence because they'll be feeling awkward, right? Mm-hmm. And they just want to end the silence at all costs. So this is one thing I would tell you, Jane, is that it's actually a tool for you. Awkwardness is. You can use that in order to get more information from your prospects or whoever you're interviewing.
That sounds like a great tip. I've heard about awkward silence and that the interviewer shouldn't fill it in with your rambling. But it's pretty interesting to view it as a tool. Really great tip. I don't know what kind of clients you are serving as a consultant, but I imagine you're working with different clients. Some of them might have a SaaS business. Mm-hmm. Some of them might be e-commerce, something else. I don't know, government agency or something. Mm-hmm. Please correct me what kind of real clients you have. Are these interviews different depending on the product, like dramatically different in structure or somewhat?
I would say not dramatically different. Most of the time they're about the same. Because we're looking for the same types of information, right? Anytime we conduct an interview or put a survey out into the world, what we're really trying to do is get more certainty in the answers for questions that we have. Those questions tend to be about the same most of the time. So you're right. We work with a lot of technology companies. We have a case study with a SaaS company that's been a long-time client. We've had, you know, technology platforms. We've worked with agencies or other consultants. Most of those interviews go about the same. And, you know, really what we're looking for is, like I said, triggers, objections, kind of what's going on in the prospect's mind. The one big challenge is occasionally we do work with businesses who either have a very rational reason to not talk to their customers, or they feel that their customers either don't or won't have time to talk to us, in which case we're looking for proxies. But we know that we will be assuming a lot in that process, and so it may not work quite as well. But there are ways around that, and one of the primary ways, which I hinted at earlier, is to talk to other people within the business who work with customers on a regular basis. And so, for instance, one of our clients, their customers are real estate agents, not just real estate agents, but top real estate agents in their individual market. So they make a lot of money, they're really busy, and all they care about is closing the next sale, right? They don't really want to talk to us about improving this company's marketing. One of the ways that we've gotten around that is to talk to members of the team who are in support and or sales and ask them questions about what they're hearing on a regular basis. And that's one way that we can get around it. Another way, of course, is to go online and read what people are saying in forums, on reviews of products that are similar, maybe complementary to yours. And you can learn a lot about your customers there as well.
That's what Amy Hoy calls sales safari. I don't know if you're familiar with the term. When you are exploring the customer in the wild without having to interview them in the awkward situation. Do you think it's a replacement or should it be used as a complementary tool for actual interviews?
Well, let's put it this way. If you're so afraid of interviewing people that you know you won't do it, then it's an okay replacement. Ideally, though, it is complementary, right? The more information, let me put it to you like this. I have never, ever, ever been in a situation where gathering too much information was a problem, right? We learn more the more we gather. Now, there's certainly a point of diminishing returns where there's no real reason or compelling reason to continue to gather more information. We prefer to always interview people and always gather online information, the sales safari. I've never heard that term, but yeah, that's a great way to think about it. But do something. That's the big takeaway anyone listening to this should have, which is, gathering actual data points that either confirm or reject some of your assumptions or biases is going to be better than not doing it.
Definitely. Talking about this, passive learning, what would be the practical tips how to implement it better? Because sometimes you obviously have one great forum where the typical customer hangs out, and it's an amazing ideal situation, but it's not always as ideal. Where else can you go look for the information on them?
Yeah, so it depends on your business. But what we find a lot of success with are review sites. So if we're working with a local or regional business, there's all types of places where people review other businesses. So we can look for the company's own reviews, or we can look for the competitors' reviews. And that's a great way to figure out what people are saying. For software, there's tons and tons of review sites. So GitApp, Capterra, G2 Crowd, on and on and on. There's something like 8 review sites we found. If you're in e-commerce or you're selling direct-to-consumer products, of course you would go to Amazon, because the amount of time, money, and resources they invest in acquiring reviews will dwarf anything that you're capable of. So they have lots of great reviews that you can just look at. And we recommend sorting by the 1-star reviews and the 5-star reviews, so you can get those passionate people. What do people who love the product say, and what did people who hated the product say? There's tons of ways to approach it. I think the key is to think about, how would a customer express themselves about your particular product or service? Where are those places online?
With direct interviews, it's pretty transparent how you process them. You record them in your, Skype recorder or an equivalent. You transcribe them, try to read through them, and source. How do you process this kind of passive research when you have enormous amount of text data, which is not structured?
Yeah, well, the key is to structure it as you go. So we use something that we call store analysis, STOR, and anybody who wants a template can go to our website, goodfunnel.co/store-analysis. And all we do is we have a spreadsheet, essentially, with 4 columns, and we're copying and pasting data as we collect it and it stands out to us. So the keys that we're looking for are sticky messages. What are those verbatim things that people are saying that are unique or memorable, and it's in the client's own language? That's the key there. What are triggers? What were things that were going on that caused people to search for a product or service or ultimately buy? What are their buying objections? And what are those repeating themes, the themes we hear over and over and over again? So as we go and we're doing this research, we're kind of structuring it along the way. And it's amazing how much you can figure out in an hour or so.
Great way. Can you please remind me of what other 2 things were on your 4-step strategy?
Yes, I'm trying to think back now. So the first was interviewing your customer. The second was collecting data. So what I mean by that is, analytics data. So if you could capture, first of all, hopefully everybody listening to this has Google Analytics installed, so you can see which pages people are visiting, how long they're spending there, what devices are they coming on, these types of questions. But we also like to go a step further, and we use a tool called Hotjar, and it allows us to create heat maps and even recordings of visits. So you can see what a visitor does when they're on your website, including mouse movements, which may seem a little bit creepy, but...
it's not the only tool that does that. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Kissmetrics is introducing something like that. And also there's InspectLib and a few others.
Yeah, and there's another there was another one that came out recently, I forget. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You can kind of choose your tool. But that's another thing we would do is scroll maps, heat maps, visit recordings, and see how people are interacting with different parts of the website, ideally particular parts of the website. So that was the second thing. And then the last thing I mentioned, Jane, was of my list of four, the last thing I mentioned was spying on your competitors.
Let's keep that one. Let's talk a little bit more about analytics. I'm checking up. I'm putting that on the back burner. Now, okay. Analytics. Can you share some amazing discoveries that you've made through exactly exploring analytics?
Yeah, absolutely. So, usually what we find is that we can kind of lay out the funnel. So, you know, no matter what business you're in, whether you want people to go through a process sequentially or not, there are certain pages on your website that are more valuable than others. Hopefully we don't have to argue about that. Let's just assume that to be true. So usually what we find that's really surprising is people are interested in maybe a particular feature, or they're, you know, spending a lot of time on the frequently asked questions page when we thought it was all very self-explanatory, right? So that's one thing we would find. The other thing that we would find is if someone, they may think they understand where to optimize their funnel and their conversions, but often pages that they thought were high contributors aren't. Right? Like, mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. One, we were working on this client's page and it was really long and it was right at the point of purchase. And they were like, you know, can you help us optimize this and get more conversions? And we said, you know, I don't know, which is the right answer, but we'll try. And we asked them, just out of curiosity, how long are people spending on this page? Asked another way, are they actually spending the time to read all of this stuff that you put in front of them? Like, does it even matter to them? And they said, oh, that's a really good question. We should look into that. And what we found after we installed a heat map and we looked at the time on page was people were barely even scrolling. And this was a monster of a page, say, you know, I don't know, it was like maybe 10 hero sections stitched together. And so, you know, in that case, we, you know, the obvious experiment was to take it down, reduce the amount of information to almost nothing, and then create a medium-sized page and test them against each other. And what we found was the medium-sized page way outperformed the other two.
That sounds like a great example. I know that this subtraction testing, there's a special word, but I forgot about it, is one of the most popular A-B tests you can do. You just cut down stuff and see what happens.
Well, it's easy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you don't have to write any new copy to do that, definitely.
Yeah.
So now let's go to exploring your competitors.
Yep.
How would one do that? You can go on, read reviews, what others say about the competitor product, if it's more popular. But do you mean we should go and explore their marketing tactics or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that we like to do. So we use a tool like SpyFu, and we can see what people are putting in their Google ads. So what is their ad text? Approximately how much are they spending? Which tells us, do they value one campaign over another? And so we're able to start comparing that against the data we've already collected, right? Let's say we had an assumption about what the number one benefit was to our prospect or customer. And what we may see is our competitors are valuing our number three benefit, and they're seeing a lot of success with that. So, you know, we can't actually know where they're the most successful because we can't understand, we don't know what their conversions are. We can't observe that. But there are proxies. So, you know, how they're allocating their marketing budgets, what their landing pages say, order of information, what kind of social proof are they using? So that's one, which is a spy tactic. The other is to just look at what they're putting on their websites and how they're arranging their websites and who they're targeting. And that gives us a sense of maybe how their strategy is slightly different and how we can focus and emphasize our message to give consumers a real and obvious choice so they can come to us and say, okay, I understand why they're different. And so, you know, I value their benefit, so I want to go with them, or I value their universal selling proposition or unique selling proposition. I want to go with them. And so that, you know, that's kind of the twofold way we do it, is to look at what they're doing on their website and also how they're allocating budgets.
Mm-hmm. I'm quite curious how this tool works. That's supposed to be confidential information, isn't it?
It is, and I'm definitely not an expert in the matter. What I can tell you, though, Jane, is if someone out there is listening to this and they know how to do it, I'd love to collect data on how people are marketing on Facebook. So far, I don't see a tool that can do that. But you know what I think they're doing is they're pinging keywords and then observing what happens on the SERP page and then estimating the budget. But again, I'm not a data expert, so I'm just guessing.
Right. So we have four tactics here: is active interviews, passive research of what customers say, looking at analytics, and observing the competition. Do you think one deserves more attention, or should they be done like in equal amounts? Should you have limited time?
Yeah, I think the interviews are where you're going to find the best and most information. You'll make the most gains from the interviews. If you have analytics installed, I mean, 30 minutes to an hour of, you know, sorting through it will give you a lot more information. The third one is to see what people say online. And then I'd say last is spying on your competitors, because definitely your lowest priority is to pay attention to what other people are doing. But yeah, does that answer your question, Jane?
Absolutely, absolutely. One more question about analytics. We all know that Google Analytics is not the friendliest tool in the world. It comes with certain data obvious in it, but mm-hmm. things like conversion tracking and others need to be set up. Do you have a resource of your own, or maybe you can point our listeners to a certain place online, how to set up a basic, you know, conversion tracking setup for your business, for your site?
Yeah, so it's not the easiest, but it's the most comprehensive, is just to Google for Google's own analytics setup information. They have a whole certification program, so they can tell you exactly what to do.
Okay. Yep.
Not that you want to become certified, but if you want it more in layman's terms, you can check out jeffalytics.com, jeffalytics.com. I don't know him. He's not paying me for this, but I have looked at his site many times, and he probably has the most information for a complete layman on pay-per-click and Google Analytics. So that might be a resource that people can check out.
It's interesting because I know of Annie Cushing, whose website is Analytics, and I see those people follow the same pattern in their domain names.
She's great also. And, you know, what is the guy's name? Avinash Kaushik. He wrote Web Analytics 2.0, but that's definitely not a beginner's book, so I wouldn't recommend starting there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds like a good resource anyways. Do you know of any other blogs that not specifically analytics, but related to what you do besides your own?
I know tons of them, but I'd rather people come to my website.
All right.
yeah, you know, there's tons of them. So a lot of the research or analytics tools like Kissmetrics and Crazy Egg both have fantastic blogs. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely recommend looking at what people are doing there. I think there's also some really good information that's outside of marketing entirely, just to get inside of the head of human beings and like, how do people make decisions? That's having a basic understanding of that, I think, will get a lot of people a lot closer to their goals.
I think you mentioned one of your favorite books. Can you please recap what, or which one it was? When we first started talking, that was off the record.
Yeah. Oh, right. I mentioned Thinking Fast and Slow by Dan Kahneman. He won a Nobel Prize for it. Yeah, it's fantastic. I'd also recommend, can I recommend two? Is that all right?
Oh, you can recommend five if you want.
Oh, don't get me started, Jane. I would also recommend The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, which is...
it's great. I read it.
Yeah, and if people have read Hooked by Nir Eyal, it's based on a lot of the same principles as that, but I just found it to be much more holistic in its approach. It's not just about software or business. It's about how people form habits for good and for bad.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Great. And because everything we do, every interaction with software is a result of habit, and you can use existing habits and you can create your own.
Right. And you can be like Facebook and try to make it work like heroin.
yes, exactly.
Take it to the extreme. But yeah, I think it's important to understand how these things work. And so that's, you know, that's one of the things I would leave people with.
So we recapped on the... you know, the most obvious activities that you can do in one day today. But should you have like all the time in your life, what else can one do to learn more about your customers?
Well, no one has unlimited time, but I think the next thing I would really recommend is, you know, you're going to have several, maybe not competing, but rival hypotheses about what may work or what may not work. You may get to the point of collecting all this data and say, okay, I have my top 10 messages or things that I want to say to visitors to my website or my landing page or however you're going to implement this. But you don't know what should be the number one or number two thing to say. And in those cases, that's where A/B testing is really, really helpful, because it's not about you, obviously. It's about your customers. And so if you have unlimited time, and ideally if you have enough traffic to make this work, I would definitely recommend doing A/B tests in order to get closer to an answer. And if you don't have the traffic, of course, you can pay for traffic through, you know, we love Facebook ads just because of the power of the audience building, and it's a lot less expensive than Google traffic or LinkedIn traffic. So that, you know, that's what I would really recommend, is allow, have a testing methodology by which your customers can tell you what resonates the most with them.
I think this is the place where I should recommend the work by my friend Nick DeSabato, who's been focusing on A/B testing for the last couple of years. And he has a book called A/B Testing Manual. So I'll point people to you to this link in the show notes. Any other resources on A/B testing you can recommend?
yeah, sure. The one book that I recommend the most is called You Should Test That. I think it was by Chris Goward, if I'm not mistaken. But that's a very comprehensive book on A/B testing.
Got it. Listen, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. Maybe to recap today's episode, for people who are, don't know anything about their customers, only basing on assumptions, one thing they should do while doing their research and one mistake they should avoid.
One thing you should definitely do is interview your customers. I sound like a broken record, but that's the most important thing you can do. The mistake you should avoid is assuming that you already know everything there is to know, because undoubtedly you're wrong. And the way those assumptions formed, even if they were correct at the time you formed them, as time goes on, people change, the market changes, your competitors change. Those assumptions are going to be wrong, at least some percentage of them. So definitely avoid that at all costs.
That sounds like a great piece of advice. Listen, where can people find you online?
Sure. So people can find me on my website, goodfunnel.co. You can email me, liston@goodfunnel.co. Or I'm going to recommend not to find me on Twitter, but to find me on Facebook. I'm starting a new trend here. So feel free to DM me on Facebook, and I promise I'm the only Liston Witherell who is under 80 on Facebook.
Great point. Thank you so much for joining us today. Listen, I think these insights will be super useful because we're all scared to talk to our customers. You need just kind of, you know, vented our frustrations a little bit with your wisdom today.
No worries. Thank you, Jane. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Liston. Have a wonderful day.